Welcome to this introduction to the origins and history of the Mahayana schools of Buddhism. I'll discuss how it grew organically from the early Buddhist teachings and the connections it shares with what's now called the Theravada lineage. Plus, I'll briefly explain how this tradition spread throughout North and East Asia and how it's adapted to the various cultures it's encountered. And you can get the handouts I created for Mahayana and all the schools of Buddhism when you use the link in the show notes. Over the next few weeks, I'll be posting more about the history of Buddhism, so please subscribe now. It's time to get started on Mahayana Buddhism. And this is, it's probably the most widespread form of Buddhism. We talked the last 2 weeks about, first of all, sort of the origin and the history of the Buddhist tradition. Obviously, you know, it's over 2,500 years of history, so like one short talk on it will definitely not do it justice. But that's a good place to start if you're totally unfamiliar with the tradition. It's up on YouTube now. And then last week we talked about early Buddhism and the Theravada tradition. Nowadays, the Theravada is kind of known as like the Southern school of Buddhism because it's more practiced in South Asia, Southeast Asia. And the Mahayana school is sometimes called the Northern school of Buddhism. And if you look at the link that I shared in chat, you'll see the little handout that I did for this week. And it starts with a little map of the spread of Theravada and Mahayana Buddhism throughout Asia. Obviously, they've now both spread globally, but this map gives you a sense of how the tradition traveled. So basically, Buddhism started in India about 2,500 years ago. And in a couple of centuries after the time of the Buddha, it had basically spread throughout all of northern India. And then Emperor Ashoka, a great Indian emperor who lived a couple of centuries after the time of the Buddha, he helped it to spread through southern India, to spread to Sri Lanka. From Sri Lanka, Buddhism spread to what's now Burma, and then to what's now Thailand. So it really became an important part of South and Southeast Asian culture, really from an early time. And back when, you know, back like a couple hundred years after the time of the Buddha, there was no Mahayana. So when Buddhism spread, it was just Buddhism. But what happened was, over about 500 years after the time of the Buddha, obviously, people had been using the original texts, which are written in Pali. They had been meditating. They had been really, you know, diving deep into this tradition that the Buddha founded. And what you see is about the first century of the Common Era, so about 500 years after the time of the Buddha, you start seeing new texts being written in Sanskrit. So the language of the earliest written records of the teachings of the Buddha are in Pali. And that's associated now with the Theravada tradition. The new texts that are associated with the Mahayana tradition are being written in Sanskrit. And there's a shift in these teachings, the early Mahayana teachings. There's a couple of important and interesting shifts that happen in terms of doctrine and in terms of people's approach to practice. And I want to talk about those later. But I personally just find it easier to kind of take things in from a historical perspective. So I just want to go a little bit through the timeline of the spread of Buddhism, of Mahayana Buddhism specifically, throughout East Asia, Central and East Asia, really. In academic scholarship right now, there's a little bit of question as to whether Mahayana started as a separate sect. It looks as though actually, we talked about sort of the first century of the Common Era, Mahayana texts begin to show up and there begin to be just different forms of the way that people approach practice. And what scholars think now is that originally the Mahayana started in communities where there were some people practicing what we would call Mahayana and some people practicing what we would call now Theravada. So they originally sort of grew up together. And then over the next couple of centuries, it looks as though people who identified as Mahayanists maybe started splitting off. You know, those two groups began to kind of separate themselves so that a monastery would be either Mahayana or one of the earlier schools of Buddhism. So part of what's difficult about talking about this historical period is that the Theravada school is only one of, I believe, 26 different sects of original Buddhism or early Buddhism, but it's the only one that survived. So when we talk about the early Mahayana, there were all these different types of early Buddhism that it was interacting with. So when we say, you know, Mahayana and Theravada, it's not really completely accurate because these monasteries that the Mahayana was growing up in might have contained people who were, you know, monks or nuns in a different sect of early Buddhism. So I'm just going to say Theravada, and I hope you can keep in mind that it's a little bit historically inaccurate when I say that. So anyway, around the first century, you begin to see these Sanskrit texts, you begin to see the development of what will become sort of a full Mahayana tradition later. And then in about the third century CE, you see Buddhism starting to spread along the Silk Route and into China. And what was available on the Silk Road, the Silk Route, it was incredibly diverse. It was all different types of Buddhism, all different texts, Pali, Sanskrit. So basically people would carry different forms of the Dharma from the beginning points of the Silk Road. And there were several different ones, but they would kind of carry it through what's now Afghanistan, through the deserts, you know, up into sort of northern China. So when we talk about Buddhism going to China and then going to the rest of East Asia, it's not like somebody, I think I tend to imagine like, well, you know, the most direct line is you go from India or you go from, you know, Burma or wherever, you just kind of hop across into like over the mountains and then boom, you're in what's now China. But that's not how it happened. There was this long diffusion through the Silk Road and just all sorts of different things, not just Buddhism. You know, people were carrying Manichaeism, they were carrying Christianity, they were carrying ancient Zoroastrian ideas. So there was a whole rich, you know, blend of things kind of making their way across the Silk Road. And it took several hundred years for Buddhism to start to actually take root in Chinese culture. And I'm talking about China a lot because it was a really important kind of hub for Buddhism to spread to the rest of East Asia. So over about 200 years, so this puts us in about the 5th century of the Common Era, Chinese scholars were translating Buddhist texts from Sanskrit and from Pali. They were kind of trying out different translations. You know, I think sometimes we think that there's this like kernel of like pure, true Buddhism, and then culture gets wrapped around it, but there's something in there that is just Buddhist that we can find. And that's not what you see with the history of Buddhism as it spreads to different cultures. Buddhism in India is all mixed together with the spiritual beliefs and the wisdom traditions of India. And then when Buddhism goes to China, it gets mixed together and understood through the lens of, again, the wisdom traditions and spiritual beliefs of China. And so, you know, Taoist ideas are the way that the Chinese initially translated Buddhism. So some of those early translations are not great at actually capturing Buddhism. It's more like Buddhism, like modulated through Taoism. So it takes a couple hundred years for Chinese to really become proficient enough and to understand the texts in a Buddhist sense and to really have Chinese Buddhism begin to take root. And it's not until Buddhism makes sense in the Chinese context that it then becomes something that larger numbers of people begin to adopt. It's not just like a few weirdos and academics, like just doing these weird Buddhist practices, you know, everyone starts to adopt them. And now a word from this video's sponsor, you. At least you could be a sponsor of this video. I have set up a Patreon page so you can join for only $3 or $10 a month and get access to live video calls so you can ask your questions like in real time. And if you prefer to just make a one-time gift to support these videos, you can also find a link to do that in the show notes below. So thanks for your support, thanks for watching, and if you like this video or subscribe to this channel, that is helpful too. Now, back to the teaching. And I just want to pause here and like underscore that, because I think sometimes like we're in a moment right now where Buddhism is moving to the West, it's moving to the global South, it's moving all over the world. And I think sometimes people, they feel like the adaptations that Buddhism makes to like integrate into different cultures are somehow like ruining the Dharma, that there's like a pure, true, inherently existent Dharma, which Buddhism teaches us is not a thing, and that we should all be doing that, you know? And I just want to say, like, from a historical perspective, you know, the integration that we see now between Buddhism and science, Buddhism and Christianity, it's sort of like we're watching, you know, the early decades of the Chinese reception of Buddhism, where they're understanding Buddhism in terms of Taoism and in terms of Confucianism and, you know, native animistic traditions and stuff like that. So we're in our own version of that right now, I think. Josky asked, does the Buddhist teaching have roots in the Indian tradition teachings? Yes, absolutely. The foundational ideas of Buddhism, samsara, nirvana, the idea of awakening, those are not unique to Buddhism. They were shared throughout a lot of the different spiritual traditions of North India at the time of the Buddha. So what we would now call Hinduism, Jainism, you know, other traditions that have since died out, those ideas were very commonly held. And just for the record, you know, ideas like karma and reincarnation and some of those, you know, that were current in Indian culture, you find those ideas basically around the world and throughout most of human history. So in a way, we as Westerners, or those of us who are, you know, educated in a Western system, it's like we're the ones who are kind of, we have a very strange belief system compared to like the other cultures that Buddhism has encountered. Keith says, that's a very interesting point, the comparison of Western and Chinese development. Yeah, Keith, it's something that has stuck with me a lot ever since grad school, and I kind of, you know, read more deeply on the Chinese reception of Buddhism. One thing that's really interesting to me is that when the Chinese were kind of at the peak of their, you know, cultural development, things were politically stable, everyone had enough to eat, Buddhism didn't really make that big of an impact. But as things began to fall apart, and I don't remember Chinese history well enough to say if this was the Warring States period or what it was, but as, you know, they went through this period of the old way of society holding together, of that kind of collapsing, and they were in between, you know, before like a new stable political situation came along, it was then that Buddhism really took hold. And I think there's an interesting parallel to be made to the Western reception of Buddhism, you know, where I feel like right now we're in a moment again of like a lot of change and problems that, you know, two generations ago no one had ever considered, and now they're kind of defining the challenges of our time. Global warming and internet security, you know, stuff like that. It's a lot of change, and I think one of the things that makes Buddhism really valuable is that it talks about change, impermanence, it talks about, you know, suffering and why we suffer and how we can suffer less. And in a time of a lot of stress and a lot of change, that's really valuable. C asks, curious, how did it spread versus how Christianity spreads? To be honest, if you look at the history of world religions, pretty much all of them spread like this. You know, you take a basic idea from one culture and a missionary or somebody takes it to another culture, and they have to adapt it to that other culture before it even makes sense to those people. So like if you think about Christianity, you know, it started in the Middle East, and then in Europe, Rome became like a major center for Christianity, and it spread throughout, you know, all the different sort of provinces of Rome. But if you think about, for instance, like Christmas, it's basically the Roman holiday of Saturnalia with a Christian kind of veneer put on top of it. So it's the same thing, you know, any transnational cultural system, whether it's religion, science, anything else, it has to make sense to people in a certain culture. So like maybe science is not a great example because it doesn't adapt as much. but even with science, you know, when you look at different cultures, they have different questions that they want to use the scientific method to ask, different answers that they want. So yeah, all of religions, basically, you know, what happens is these major world religions, so to speak, go to a new area and then they interact with the existing beliefs and practices in that area and you get something new. That's my perspective. It's an academic perspective. I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with me on that, but I think that is historically accurate. So this whole rich blend of stuff is moving across the Silk Road, comes to China by about the 5th century of the Common Era. There's a real emergence of Chinese Buddhism. This is later going to develop into Chan, which gets translated into Japanese as Zen. It also is going to lay the foundations for what we would now call Pure Land. So this is a really formative period for Mahayana development in China and then in what's going to spread throughout the rest of East Asia. So in about the 4th century CE, Buddhism spreads to Korea, and in about the 6th century of CE, Buddhism spreads from Korea to Japan, and then after the Japanese are introduced to Buddhism, they then send people to China to learn from Chinese masters. So really everyone in that kind of East Asian cultural world tends to look back to China as their source for Buddhism, and China looks to India. So I just want to lay that out because, you know, sometimes people aren't even really clear where Buddhism comes from. Like, they think maybe it comes from China. That's a little brief historical overview. There's so much detail you could get into. For this presentation, I read in a book called Buddhism, Introducing the Buddhist Experience. It's edited by Mitchell and Jacoby. And if you want like a good introduction to all different forms of Buddhism, I really recommend that book. Sometimes you get an introduction to Buddhism and they don't say it, but it's written from a Tibetan perspective, or it's written from a Theravadan perspective. And this one, it's written from an academic perspective, and they try to treat all the different schools equally and give you a good introduction. And I just want to say the recent editions of that book are really expensive, but if you get the older ones, they are not really expensive. Please let me know if you have any questions or any comments, just drop them in the chat and I'll try to address them. So we've talked a little bit about the historical development and spread of Mahayana Buddhism. I just want to like put a footnote here. Vajrayana Buddhism, which we're going to talk about next week, which is the dominant form in Tibet and Bhutan and some areas of Nepal and Mongolia. Vajrayana Buddhism is a subset of Mahayana Buddhism. So it's not like some different thing, but because it looks pretty different and it kind of is the next major development to come out of Indian Buddhism, I'm going to give it its own week.